You are listening to the serialized audiobook podcast for Blood of the Stars, an epic fantasy novel written by Corinne Norton, read by Peter Franson and Corinne Norton. If you can't wait to listen to the whole audiobook, or if you want a signed physical copy, go to corinnenorton.com/shop to get the lowest cost by buying direct. You can also find the audiobook on Audible, Barnes & Noble, and other standard retailers. Please enjoy the next installment of Blood of the Stars by Corinne Norton.
Chapter 72. After sailing past Omranen's viewpoint and hiking through the canyon with Riverin's men and the pirate crews, Garen itched to reach Daisy's camp. His bond mark itched, too. He'd tried cutting it out several times on Starspeed, but each time he did, the betrayal burned, digging up memories of Enla's suffering. Memories he'd shared so deeply with her as he tried to take them from her that they were as strong as any of his own. Bonds weren't meant to be broken, and it went against everything in his nature to do it. Then he asked Larkos to do it for him, but the older man laughed and backed away, refusing to take part in breaking something so sacred in case Kalia found out and had his hide for it. Said it was something Garen had to do for himself for the right reason. In the end, he left it alone. By now, everyone in LNS had all written him off as a traitor, and the cowardly side of him couldn't help hoping that Lenda might cut out the bond mark herself. The Valley of Kron was just over the next hill when the brown blur of Gullet's feathers came into view. He soared through the sky before landing on Riverin's arm with an irritated squawk. "I thought he was going to stay with Aeliana until we caught up," Garen said. Riverin snorted.
"He's a hawk, not a person. Sometimes our communication isn't perfect."
He held up his arm, squinting at Gullet's leg.
"Wait, there's a message."
Garen tensed as Riverin unrolled the parchment, the back revealing the message Garen had written to Daisy. Riverin's face paled, and his eyes met Garen's.
"They met up with the troops, but they were attacked by Durrican. They had to keep moving toward the fortress."
He passed over the note.
"She's asking us to try to catch up. Says they'll have extra horses in the woods southeast of the valley, where the wounded are recovering."
Garen scanned the message, wanting it to hold more details. Still, a part of him relaxed. At least Daisy was safe. But what about the others? To the pirates' credit, they didn't even grumble when Garen demanded they pick up their pace. A few even gave whoops of excitement at the news of the dragon. But once they crested the hill and the valley came into view, the mood shifted. They skirted the remains of the camp as if it were filled with the diseased instead of the dead. Blackened bodies were grouped in piles, holes started and abandoned as if someone had attempted to take care of the dead, but realized the task was too large.
"If we ride hard, we'll catch up with her before the sun's sleep,"
Riverin said. The words comforted Garen, who fought against his Starlock's pull to seek out the memories around him, knowing he couldn't bear watching everyone slaughtered once again. What would happen when they reached Mavis's fortress? How could they expect to save Emerus when Mavis had a dragon once more? Between the cries of pain and the stench of unwashed bodies, the soldiers were easy to find. Too easy, considering Durrican could return. But he wasn't likely to set the entire forest aflame when it led into Mavis's woods. Those who had stayed to care for the injured were quick to give Garen and his men the horses they would need, reassuring them that they were only half a day behind. Despite pushing the horses farther with his Starlock's power, the ride seemed impossibly long, and it was soon after the sun disappeared behind the treetops that Garen finally heard the distant murmur of travelers. He urged his horse on until he was stopped by sentries, who eventually let him pass. By this point, his nerves couldn't take it any longer, so he dismounted, tossing the reins to Riverin.
"Am I your stable boy now?"
Riverin called after him with a laugh. Garin scanned the troops for the long waves of brown hair that would give her away. He supposed he should be grateful that so many lived, but eventually he grew impatient, nosing his way in by a campfire. "Where's Eliana?" The men all pointed east, closer to the front lines. Garin picked up his pace, repeating the question as he half ran, half walked down the line of troops.
"Garin?"
He turned, tempted to close his eyes in relief, but too eager to see her face. She stood, halfway out from a poorly constructed tent, one hand holding open the flap and the other gripping a lantern to reveal that she was wholly intact.
"You're here!"
Daisy's face bloomed into a smile, and his heart raced, knowing that smile was only for him.
"I wasn't the one fending off dragons."
He rushed to her side, ready to wrap his arms around her, to verify the truth for himself that she was unharmed. But their friendship had been tenuous before he left, and they'd been apart for almost a moon. He hesitated, and in that space of time, Lukai stepped out behind her. Embracing her felt like crossing a line in front of her bondmate.
"Neither was I."
Her gaze dropped, her rueful words falling flat. Lukai awkwardly patted her back, and she stiffened, the change almost imperceptible.
"As long as you're safe."
Garin's face heated when the words came out more desperate than he intended.
"Your people will need you safe," he rushed to add.
"My people?"
she scoffed. Garin clenched his jaw to hold back the words, threatening to tumble out. This wasn't the time or place to explain he'd had a lot of time on Starspeed to think about their family's histories. Especially when so much of his thoughts went back to his parents' role in her kidnapping. If he explained all that had changed for him, he'd have to reveal their part in it. He wasn't ready for that. Lukai's eyes narrowed, and he stepped closer to Daisy.
"How did you get here?
And who else did you bring?"
"My crew helped me escape. Well, really, they helped me commit treason. I've brought men to fight. Recreants from LNS who don't want Mavis enthroned any more than they want my sister as queen."
As he spoke, Riverin and Larkos caught up, with dozens of his other men following. The offering felt pitiful compared to the hordes of men camped out before him, but in light of the damage he'd seen at the Valley of Kron, every extra fighting hand would count. Daisy's face broke into a grin, and she set down her lantern so she could embrace Riverin and then Marnok, an easiness to her greetings that left Garin regretting his earlier hesitation. He glanced at Lukai, but the other man seemed unperturbed, which only made Garin more irritated. He shouldn't be more jealous than her bondmate. He scratched the mark on his palm, then shoved his hands in his pockets, not wanting the extra reminder of his unbroken bond.
"This will raise the people's spirits," Lukai admitted. "Maybe give them hope that infiltrating Mavis's hold the day after tomorrow might have some measure of success."
"But summer solstice is still 3 days away," Garin said. "If Mavis hasn't branded Eliana yet, she won't do it before then. We could use the extra day to plan and prepare." Lukai raised his eyebrows, but made no comment on Garin's awareness of the branding. "Mavis knows we're here. If we can get to her earlier, maybe we'll still catch her off guard. We can hope." His words fell flat with his own disbelief. When another soldier beckoned Lukai back inside the tent, Garin turned to look for Daisy. Firelight from campfires danced across the soldiers, but every now and then he caught sight of her brown waves peeking out between shirt sleeves and shoulders. At Silmar's glare, Garin began introductions, which meant Kendallin also came out to sift every man's soul. A few of the pirates resisted, while a few others seemed too eager to place their hands on Kendallin. She only had to pull out her knife and threaten to replace one man's hand with a hook to get them all back in line. Veldin slapped Garin's back with his slimy, webbed hand in lieu of a greeting.
"I almost wish she'd follow through," the older man said. "Unfortunately, we'll need every last one of their thieving hands to pull this off."
"Is it that bad?" Garin asked. Veldin bobbed his head back and forth in indecision.
Silmar is always gloom and doom, but I think he might be right this time. He'll want you in on tonight's meeting. You can decide for yourself if it's hopeless after you hear his plans. I doubt anyone wants my opinion. I'm more likely to incite a mutiny if some of these men figure out who I am. Even as he said the words, he realized it might be too late. He hadn't bothered covering his face. Aeliana made sure everyone knew how you ensured our escape from LNS. There's not a man or a woman here who would go up against you now. Velden's gaze sought out Daisy, so Garen watched her too, this time noticing the dark circles under her eyes. She'd been through too much in the last few moons, and the worst was yet to come. He didn't bother saying goodbye to Velden. He headed straight for Daisy. She looked up at him, her eyes brightening through the pain.
"I still can't believe you came," she said.
The note from Gullet wasn't enough?
No, it was. I just...
She trailed off, then looked up at him.
I feel like every time I hope for something to happen, it gets ripped away. I didn't want that to happen with you.
She twisted the ends of her hair, not holding his gaze.
You can't get rid of me that easily. He lightly tapped her shoulder with his knuckles. I've been chasing you for years.
I'm not about to stop now. She smiled faintly, watching as Marnock made his way through the crowd. The older man stopped various people, asking them each a question, probably wondering if they knew him before his memory loss.
"I'm scared, Garen," she whispered. "Anything could happen in the next couple days. So much could go wrong."
He glanced at her worried eyes, his mind shifting back to their childhood, to the chubby arms reaching out and begging for one more story because the shadows at night were frightening. Only this time, he didn't have a story to cheer her up.
"I think we're all scared," he said.
She nodded, blinking far too fast.
"Come here."
He ignored the itch of his bond mark as he took her hand, weaving through the tents and fires until he reached the edge of the camp. He gently nudged her to a fallen log, then sat beside her, still gripping her hand. They sat, and a million questions came to his mind, most too personal to ask out loud.
"How is Durrican helping Mavis after you freed him?"
A crease formed between Daisy's eyebrows that Garen wished he could smooth out.
"She branded him again. I saw it on his paw, and Aura found it when she sifted his soul, or tuned into his memories. I still don't understand her magic."
"That makes all of us." Her lips quirked up, and Garen fought for something else to say, something that might keep her smiling.
"I'm glad Durrican didn't get to you. Would have wasted all my efforts to keep you safe."
Her smile dropped, and her eyes grew wet.
"I wanted him to take me. I offered myself up. Instead, he just kept killing them. All of them."
She pulled her hand from his to bury her face in her hands, but it seemed more like she was hiding than crying. Garen's insides twisted, half of him horrified that she had put herself at risk, the other hating the way her guilt weighed her down. At their feet, amidst the grass, a handful of daisies sprouted, their petals unfurling. Garen's heart pounded as a dozen memories surfaced from his childhood. The flowers had grown in a field near Selenoft's Sungazer. He and Daisy had spent hours there over the course of his dedication year. Her baby fingers hadn't been able to form them into chains at first, so she'd insisted he make them for her, fashioning them into necklaces and bracelets, sashes and crowns. But there were other memories, too. Moments she'd been frightened or sad, and the flowers had sprouted. Even in the dead of winter. He'd never seen magic in a child so young, hadn't known it was possible. Still wasn't sure how such a thing could happen. But he'd known then that she was special, and he knew it even more now. As her shoulders shuddered, his guilt rose to the surface. Maybe he should use this opportunity to tell her about his parents sending him to her family with a spy. He glanced back at the camp and saw Aura sitting serenely at its edge, her leg bandaged and eyes closed, lips curved up in a secretive smile.
It's like the ripples,
he whispered, finally catching on to what Aura had been suggesting.
What?
Our choices affect others, he said. But there could be good effects as well as bad ones. And there were choices made before we were here that affected us, too. Each choice ripples out to touch the people and things in its path. When I was home, I found out my parents sent me to Selenoft for my dedication year so my servant could spy on your family. Her face blanched, so he rushed on. My parents' decision resulted in a terrible outcome. One that I will always feel responsible for, just like you're carrying a weight you're not meant to bear. Think of the good that still came from my dedication year. I met you. Bolstered by his words, he reached for her hand, wrapping it tight within his. And I spent my life searching for you instead of taking part in my family's tyranny.
It's hard to see what good can come from Durakan being branded again.
She bit her lip, her gaze on their hands. All we can do is keep trying, Garen said, the reminder as much for himself as it was for her. Keep moving forward. We make the best choice that lies right in front of us. He squeezed her hand and she squeezed his back.
Thank you, Garen, she whispered.
The mark of his bond burned between their palms, but he hardly noticed.
Chapter 73. Aeliana hesitated before stepping back into the tent. All the newcomers had been checked by Kendallin and offered food, and now Silmar was eager to finalize their rescue plan. He wanted her there, but she couldn't help feeling she didn't belong. She was more likely to throw her mother into shock then help bring her out of her branded stupor. Or she might go into shock herself. Sure, she could throw up some light shields, maybe shoot an arrow and throw a dagger, but this was war. As much as she wanted to do her part, she worried she was more of a liability. An elbow poked her rib, and Aeliana turned to find Iris nudging her farther in. Silmar won't be happy if we're late. Over a dozen men and women gathered in the tent, most around a small table, which was more like four logs resting on tree stumps. A map stretched across its surface, rocks keeping it from rolling up. Torchlight revealed several familiar faces, and Aeliana's tense muscles loosened. Cyrus, Kendallin, and Lukai huddled over the map, tracing lines with their fingers, while Silmar shook his head. Larkos and Riverin watched from a dark corner, while Marnok stood by two strangers in uniforms, one balding with a hooked nose and the other with hair reaching his shoulders, the longest Aeliana had seen on a Vendaren. Marnok gestured from them to his face, talking emphatically while the men shrugged. Veldin's, Holmes, and Jasperus's backs had faced her as they bent over the map, but with the opening of the tent flap, they turned.
Should she be here?
The bald soldier asked, his attention leaving Marnok to focus on Silmar.
She has the most to lose in this battle, Silmar said. And the most to gain, the second soldier said.
I'm here to make sure Silmar has a plan that factors in the risks of bringing me along. Aeliana understood their apprehension. She'd felt it every day of this journey, when it seemed like no one else had. But now that someone else voiced it, the sting struck deeper. Were they all thinking she was untrustworthy? Was this man the only one willing to speak up?
She looks and sounds like Mavis,
the bald soldier said in disgust.
She looks like her mother, Jasperus argued. Who looks like Mavis?
The first man pointed out. She looks and sounds nothing like Mavis. Garin left the shadows near Riverin and Larkos and stepped closer to her side, his hand on the hilt of his sword. Ileana couldn't help the relief flooding through her. She hadn't realized until now that it was his face she'd been searching for, his reassuring presence. One glance at Lukai's passive expression put it all in perspective. She trusted Garin to passionately support her, but she also trusted him to passionately disagree with her. When he spoke encouraging words, it wasn't because of a bond. It was because he meant them.
"Mavis's hair has more gold," Garin continued. "Her jaw is broader, and her right ear is higher than her left. She tilts her chin up so high you can see the hair in her nostrils, and she makes an awful noise in the back of her throat every so often, like she might hack up her dinner."
He lifted his chin at a ridiculous angle while snorting and coughing until Ileana thought he might gag. He stopped in front of Ileana.
"And when her eyes bore into yours?"
Garin's look shifted to a smolder so fast that Ileana's heart pounded and her palms sweat.
"You assume she might kill you on the spot."
Ileana's hand tugged at her collar, the heat of all the bodies in the tent finally getting to her. That wasn't exactly where she thought he was going with that look, but she supposed it made more sense. Half the group stared at Garin incredulously, but Silmar let out a raspy chuckle.
"Couldn't have described her better myself."
Garin grinned.
"The benefits of sitting in on horribly boring council meetings."
Holm and Velden shifted from their spots at the table, leaving room for Ileana, Iris, and Garin to step forward, while the older men crossed to the other side and flanked Silmar. In the opposite dark corner, Ileana thought she caught a glimpse of Aura's crossed arms, but she couldn't make out her face to know for sure. Velden and Silmar went back to debating something on the map, and Marnok slid between Ileana and Iris, his gaze on the map, but his thoughts clearly far away.
"Everything all right?"
Ileana whispered. He hesitated.
"They didn't recognize me. None of the people here recognize me."
Ileana patted his arm.
"We'll just have to try another town after this. Keep trying until you find someone."
He shook his head.
"If I was on your side, if I was an enemy of Mavis, don't you think at least one person here would know me?"
The pain on his face made Ileana's gut twist, but his words sent a shot of alarm through her. Maybe he was right. No, he couldn't be. There had to be thousands of people in Vindaris who were either ignorant or ambivalent about this war. Maybe even more who wanted to be rid of Mavis, but weren't ready to fight for it.
"One man thought he recognized me," Marnok said. "Asked if I had a Starlock. When I told him no, he said I wasn't the man he thought. Said I should have a Sprite Starlock around my neck, and at least 20 more years on me."
"Maybe you're that man's son," Ileana suggested.
"The man he knew had no children."
His eyes took on a hopeless stare. "Even if you're right, which I don't think you are," she said, "you're on our side now, and that's what matters." He nodded and turned back to the map, but his face remained bunched with worry.
"General Nels, if you send your troops east and west," Velden asked, "who'll be taking the center?"
The bald soldier frowned, bending closer to the map.
"I'd planned to have a contingency troop in the center, but it was going to spread us thin. Garin's men have volunteered to take that role, but we don't expect them to actually hold off Mavis's army.
Garin nodded, his jaw clenched. 50 sailors would hardly put a dent in her forces.
And Garin's men? What happens when they're not able to hold off the zealots?
Eliana asked, following the line traced by the general's hand. If she was understanding the notes he'd scratched on the map's surface, there would be dozens of troops on the edges, leaving Garin's men in the center, exposed. Are they being sacrificed for the rest of us to gain entry?
Of course not.
The general stood straight, as if offended by her question.
We want them to lure her men away from her fortress, leaving it vulnerable to our attack. We'll have them safely retreat, over and over, drawing Mavis's troops back with them. They can bring them all the way back here and let them raise our camp, so long as the rescue team gets through.
He glanced at Silmar, deferring to him for the next phase.
That rescue team includes most of us, Silmar said. What's discussed in here cannot leave this tent in case Mavis's progenies catch wind of someone's memory or motives.
Should I leave? Eliana asked. If she brands me, she can control me. I could tell her anything.
I'm not sure it matters. By the time she feels threatened enough to brand you, we'll be riding on luck and chance.
Silmar paused.
Several people have suggested we leave you behind.
Eliana stiffened, and a murmur spread among the others. She'd expected him to have protective measures in place. Her involvement hinged on him having contingency plans. But he hadn't talked about leaving her behind for months.
You said my mother might need to see me to escape the prison her mind has been in for so many years. We can break her out of the physical prison in the fortress. Then we can bring her to you.
The fear she'd tamped down for the last few days broke through the surface. She couldn't stand by and wait for everyone else to risk their lives to save her. But I've been training. I've progressed so much.
We can't leave her, Jasperus said. Who will cut out her brand if Mavis does the branding ceremony early?
Anyone could stay and watch her, Kendallin said. She's a liability who's more likely to turn on us if she's branded than to be helpful.
Leave her here? Garin asked. Right where we're guiding Mavis's troops?
An argument broke out, everyone's voices clashing, but each of them saying her name, speaking about her, for her. She closed her eyes, trying to drown out the individual voices so she could hear her own thoughts. In 2 days, they would all be walking or riding to their possible deaths, fighting for their freedom, but also for hers. It wasn't right that they bore the brunt of the danger and the weight of the risks. Not unless she was willing to do the same. Her fear of being a liability hadn't gone away. But facing that fear seemed far better than sitting around waiting for her fate while letting everyone else make sacrifices. I want to go. Eliana's words came out too quietly for anyone to hear.
I want to go, she said again, raising her voice to drown out the others.
They stopped talking, turning to take her in. Her hands shook, so she gripped the edge of the table to hide her fear.
I can heal people, which is an essential skill on the battlefield. I can give them my energy, which, despite weaning, has been far more than I can use on my own.
Veldon's eyebrows dipped at that revelation.
I can protect people with light shields.
Cyrus, Veldon, Lukai, Jasperus, and Holm nodded their approval, but the rest still seemed unconvinced, especially the soldiers she didn't know. They probably wondered if her similarities to Mavis ran far deeper than her looks. Still, Eliana continued, we'll need to have a contingency plan. You're right. If she activates the brand, I'll become your enemy. It's been my greatest fear ever since Silmar and Jasperus explained brands to me. Silmar stood taller, no longer leaning on his staff.
We already have a plan.
The mood around the room shifted, her friends suddenly unable to hold her gaze. Even Cyrus looked away, clearly in on whatever plan Silmar referenced. Only Garen stiffened beside her.
What plan? He asked.
When none of the Vendarans spoke up, Cyrus sighed.
I told them Eliana wouldn't do it. It depends on her being willing to give her blood to Jasperus. If Mavis activates the brand early, Jasperus can brand Eliana as well, so his brand will compete with Mavis's.
Eliana sucked in a breath. Will that work? If it could work that easily, why hadn't they told her this before?
It's blood magic, Garen said, shaking his head. You're no better than Mavis if you're willing to risk summoning the dark spirits.
Eliana shrank back, even though his accusation was directed at Silmar. She'd been so quick to be pulled into the idea. Was she still so tempted by blood magic that she wasn't even aware of all the times it tempted her?
It's a risk worth taking, Silmar said. On the battlefield, we lie and kill. The boundaries between right and wrong shift, depending on the motives behind the action.
Cyrus's eyes met Eliana's, but the pained expression on his face made it impossible to know if he agreed with Silmar's words.
Besides, Silmar continued, Jasperus doesn't have a history of blood magic. Even if his actions call the dark spirits, he won't invite them in. He won't be tempted.
His unspoken words rang in Eliana's ears. She had a history of blood magic. If she called the dark spirits, she might invite them in.
What about Mavis? Eliana asked. Wouldn't we just be delivering dark spirits for her to use?
We should assume she'll be using them anyway, Silmar said. She doesn't need our help for that.
Eliana shivered, and Garen took another step closer to her.
What would the sun think of your plan? Garen asked.
I'm guessing the sun is just as eager to see Mavis out of power as we are.
Silmar's voice took on a weary tone. His eyes bore into Garen, who clamped his jaw shut and mirrored Silmar's glare.
If it's so harmless, why don't you just brand me now? Eliana asked.
We need the brand to be just as strong as Mavis's, Silmar said. So it must be done on the same day. Your question about bonds interfering with brands was a good one. It got me thinking about how a second brand can interfere with the first. A brand will always override a bond. However, a second brand could compete for control. If Jasperus brands you, it won't override her brand, but it will weaken her connection to you. You could fight it.
Eliana glanced at Jasperus. So he'll command me to fight it?
You have to remember who Mavis is, Silmar said. Once she realizes what he's done, she'll have no qualms about eliminating the threat of his interference.
Eliana took a step back, understanding sending a cold chill through her chest. She turned to Jasperus.
You'll do it, expecting her to kill you.
He shook his head.
I'll do it, expecting her to brand me next, so she can control us both. Which is why I'll need to be killed.
I hope you enjoyed listening to the latest installment of Blood of the Stars by Corinne Norton. If you enjoy listening to this narration, you might enjoy listening to the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast, where Pater and I narrate fantasy short stories from a variety of authors to help you find your next favorite author. Check it out at findingfantasyreads.com. Thanks so much for listening.